Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic health share ministry to provide an affordable health sharing program rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthshare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
This is the second week of our new series that we're calling Confessions of a Control Freak, only a partially autobiographical message series, because I have admitted, and I willingly admit, how could I deny it, that I can be a bit of a control freak from time to time, although I prefer the designation, I've got a keen eye for detail. But this is only partially autobiographical because, bottom line, for this series, we're contending that we're all control freaks, at least in one way or another, about one thing or another, about something, cooking, cleaning, driving, working, health and fitness, diet and exercise, saving or shopping, scheduling, planning, and of course raising kids. Each of us clutches onto something or several somethings that become an issue of trust for us, and when left unchecked can get out of hand and can get in the way of a relationship with God. If we could learn, on the other hand, to release our grip a bit, the quality of that relationship, along with the quality of our lives, could actually increase. And that's what this series is all about. No, last week, if you were with us, we invited you to send in suggestions of how to know when you're a control freak and how you know when you're a control freak. And we were overwhelmed with response. We received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of responses, just a sampling of some of them. You know you might be a control freak if you set your thermostat in your car or the volume on your TV to only even numbers, never odd numbers, you might be a control freak. You might be a control freak if you add things to your to-do list that you've already done just so that you can enjoy crossing them off again. You might be a control freak. You might be a control freak. I love this one. You might be a control freak if you count the number of items in other people's baskets in the express lane at the grocery store just to make sure they're not over the limit. You might be a control freak. You might be a control freak if all your shirts and jackets or dresses and blouses in your closet have to face in the same direction and all of the hangers are evenly spaced, you might be a control freak. You might be a control freak if you've ever redone your kid's science project because it wasn't good enough. You might be a control freak. I had to think about this one, but think about it. You might be a control freak if you number the hangers in your closet to keep track of what you wear every day, to make sure you don't wear the same outfits within established and intentional intervals of time, you might be a control freak. And if you don't number the hangers in your closet, but right now you're thinking, wow, what a great idea, you might be a control freak too. Well, today we're looking about giving up control when it comes to a specific aspect or or area of our life. When it comes to surrendering our idea of success or achievement or greatness, essentially we tend to think about success, achievement, greatness as getting life just the way we want it. We could broadly describe it in that way, getting life just the way we want it. Of course, depending upon your personality and your motives, that might look very different from person to person. For instance, for some of you, if you had the world just the way you want it, it would be a lot of fun. It would be a constant party. Your life would be a constant party, and you'd be the life of the party. And your motto would be to have a good time all of the time. For other people, it might be about independence. It might be about being left alone. Your idea of success in life would be to do what you want to do when you want to do it, uninhibited by anybody else, to work out of your own head and to think your own thoughts. For some, it's about the exercise of power and authority, getting to decide stuff. Another common view of this would be all about money and making it and investing it. For others, success is just doing stuff, making things happen, because you're a driver, you're a builder, you're a leader, and you're addicted to progress. You believe success and greatness is all about moving things forward. For some, it's about being at the top of your game, a leader in your chosen profession. And of course, there is fame. Greatness is about being well-known and widely admired, about popularity. But for most of us, though, we probably approach this more modestly. It has to do with living a life here in our North Baltimore community that meets or maybe exceeds the standards of our neighbors and peers. So it's about the house and the car and the kids' sports and the kids' school and the kids' school stickers on the cars and all of that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with any of these categories. And if they resonate with you and your experience, great. Please understand, I'm not in the least criticizing. Some of them resonate with my experience too. In fact, I'll go on to make a confession. Because this series is called Confessions, here's mine. I actually am very proud of the fact that our book, Rebuilt, is a bestseller. It's a bestseller in its category on Amazon. And I love that it's been translated into 6 different languages, and people around the world are reading it, and that we're invited to speak in many places around the world about it. And doubtless, there's some vanity in that for me, for sure. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. It's okay. It's just that success, achievement, greatness, as the world calculates it, is different than the greatness that God calls us to. Because God has a different calculation on this. And that's what we're going to look at this morning. And to do it, we're going to take a look at the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, where we read this. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Kind of silly and childish question. Their timing was interesting too. Interesting as in deeply annoying. Jesus had just announced that he was going to suffer and die on the cross. That's the context of this question. And James and John completely ignore that message and proceed to nag him for a foolish favor. Now, if you have kids, you probably experienced this scenario yourself. As a side note, the apostles didn't follow Jesus for any kind of altruistic or noble reasons. Neither were they religiously motivated, at least not at first. They followed him because they wanted stuff from him. So if you're only here this morning because you want something from God, or your life is a mess, or you're facing some kind of problem and hoping that maybe God can bail you out or help you out this time, congratulations. You're in good company. You're actually following in the footsteps of the apostles. The earliest followers of Jesus followed him because they wanted something from him. And that's where most people start when it comes to faith. And that's fine. That's okay. Follow Jesus for whatever reason that you want to follow him, because as you grow in faith, he can change and transform your motivation. So it matters not in the least why it is you're getting started. Jesus isn't surprised by James and John and their selfish and self-serving request. He's not annoyed by it. He's not insulted by it. In fact, he sort of plays into it. He says, what do you want? And they answer, grant that in your glory we may sit one at your right and the other at your left. So James and John make pretty bold ask. They believe that one day Jesus is going to be king. That's what they mean by in your glory. And so their request is that when Jesus is large and in charge, they want the seats of honor nearest him. They want to be his top cabinet officers. And I suppose when Jesus heard this, he smiled. He smiled at the incongruity between their ask and what he was about and what he was about to do. And so he cautions, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? What does that mean? Well, in Scripture, the cup is a metaphor for God's plan and purpose for someone. And for Jesus, that meant the cross. To be baptized is to be immersed. He's talking about being immersed, about being subjected to complete and total suffering as an act of complete and total service. And if James and John want power and privilege, they're going to have to serve as he serves. Impetuously, naively, blindly, they answer, we can do it. So Jesus says to them in reply, the cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or my left is not mine to give, but those for whom it has been prepared. This is probably the best example in all of Scripture of be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for, because it might not be what you think. And nonetheless, the other apostles are jealous. They're indignant. They're already annoyed at these two, because we know from elsewhere in Scripture that James and John were Jesus' favorites. Jesus definitely had favorites. It's okay to have favorites. Jesus had favorites, so the others are already watching them to begin with. And now the pair are trying to court additional favors for themselves. And everybody is annoyed with it. So if you're a parent, you know this scenario too. One of your kids is needy, nagging, and annoying, and then all of them become needy, nagging, and annoying. Jesus knows what's going on. He recognizes the infighting among them. And so he gathers them together, rather like a father might gather his kids together to try and bring peace among them. And he says, those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles, lord it over them. Their great ones make their authority felt. So no leader or king or potentate of the day would have been insulted by that description. They would have agreed with it. Power and authority meant you get to tell other people what to do, and you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. That is the definition of power and authority. And there are plenty of leaders today, you know them, and so do I, who have that definition of leadership. The whole reason to have power is you get to tell other people what to do, and you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And the apostles, on hearing this, probably would have been cheering. Like, yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. That's what we want. Turns out, they were right. Jesus is a king, and he came to institute a kingdom, but a kingdom that will be completely and totally different from the kingdoms of this world. In no small measure, because the exercise of power and authority in his kingdom will be so different. A fact that he's herein introducing them to. So he says, those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles, lord it over them. Their great ones make their power and their authority felt. But, it cannot be that way. It shall not be that way among you. He's guiding and grooming these guys to take over for him when he's gone, which is approaching sooner than they realize. Any lesson that they have learned from the world about the exercise of power and authority needs to be laid aside. They will exercise power and authority, but a power and authority very different than the power and authority exercised in the world, leading to a very different kind of greatness. Whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be the servant of all and the slave of all. Whoever wishes to be great. Don't miss that. Whoever wishes to be great. He doesn't criticize the apostles for wishing to be great. Not at all, not in the least. He's actually guiding them in that goal. Every one of us should wish to be great. Every one of us should want to be successful. Every one of us should want that for our family and friends too. He doesn't criticize us for that. He doesn't criticize them for that. But he wants to direct their desire away from a position of power and authority that is over people to a power and authority that serves people. Greatness comes in service. It means making a contribution into the lives of the people around us. Instead of going into situations calculating what we can get, the calculation that we want to make is what we can give. Why? Why? Because the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Because service is one of the ways, in fact, one of the principal ways we can grow in likeness to Christ. This week we're making an invitation to you and your families to sign up to serve on Christmas Eve at the fairgrounds. I know. This is premature. Christmas decorations aren't even up at the mall yet, and here we are talking about Christmas. It's ridiculous. It's absurd, but it'll be here before you know it. Besides, if we wait until after Thanksgiving to ask you to help us out, a lot of people have already made their Christmas plans, and even if you want to help us out, you can't. So we want to get in on the front end of that discussion and ask you to think about it. So think about it. Last year, 10,000 people attended Christmas Eve at the Cow Palace. And that requires 500 volunteer ministers to create the irresistible environment that we're aiming to create. The opportunities are simple and basically fall into five categories. There are the parking ministers who work out in the parking lot, the greeters who greet and provide basic orientation for guests as they try and navigate the immense expanse of the fairgrounds, host ministers who host seating sections and help with seating and other guest services, kids ministers who help host our kids programs that evening, and ops ministers who help set up and clean up in the days leading to and following Christmas. So, even if you absolutely positively cannot serve on Christmas Eve, you can help us out sometime that week. If you've never served before, if you're not currently a minister, great. This would be a great first experience for you. It's definitely a lot of fun. Everybody who serves says that. And serving can be a beautiful addition to a very special evening. It can also be a family affair with multiple generations serving alongside one another. Many families have already made this an established Christmas tradition. And what a wonderful way to teach your kids or grandkids a broader view, a more generous and selfless view of your family's Christmas celebration than serving. We're only asking for a very specific time commitment, 1 2-hour shift. You'll have a supervisor, we'll provide instruction and everything you need to succeed, so no worries about that. If you already serve every year and you're planning to serve again this year, we want you to sign up as well so that we can know you're in and count on you. To sign up, simply head out to the concourse after Mass, look for the red and white balloons, and our friendly staff members who someone has somehow talked into wearing Santa hats in the middle of October. But hats notwithstanding, they are ready to help you out and answer your questions. You can also sign up online if you're joining us online. Just look for the tile on our homepage. As Christ followers, we should absolutely aspire to greatness. And it turns out greatness is achievable. It is accessible. It's at hand. And it's actually quite simple. Maybe not always easy, but entirely simple. The greatness we aspire to is likeness to Christ, and the greatest way to do it is through service.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusOfLexington.com.